Welcome back to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. I am so excited about the show that we have ahead of us. We have some phenomenal information that could save lives. I am Dr. Michael Karlfeldt, and with me I have my co-host,
Tanya Hobo.
You're going to need to tune in to what's going on today. The information is jam-packed, so don't step away.
So excited. Let's go ahead and get this started. Welcome to Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Karlfeldt. And today we have with us all the way from New York, Adrian. So Adrian, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, I'm excited to hear your story. I mean, I know that you're doing some incredible things now, but I would love to hear kind of where it all started.
It's a long story.
Okay. I brought my pillow and my PJs and I'm ready.
You know, it's hard to really pinpoint where it started because I was always a pretty sick kid. And I have a feeling I was probably bitten as a child because I used to sleep out in my parents' backyard in my little tent all the time in the Hudson Valley where I live, which is the most tick endemic place in the United States. But my health really took a very poor turn around my early 40s when I got a red rash on my arm. Never knew it was a tick bite because it wasn't a bullseye. It was a red oval rash. And then I started to have really bizarre symptoms like insomnia and respiratory infections and dental infections and rashes and hives and you name it. And of course, just like everyone with Lyme, I went to a multitude of doctors, naturopaths, homeopaths, became a homeopath, anything to try to get better.
And this was just as a kid you started with all these things?
No. I started doing all of these things in my early 20s because I wasn't feeling well, but it didn't really start to collapse on me until my early 40s when I think I was bitten again. I have never found a tick on me, ever. My ex-husband was a farmer and he had been bitten many times. And of course, there's speculation about Lyme disease being an STD as well. But I did have a red rash on my arm in my early 40s. I did demand that my primary care doctor do something. And he did some blood work and he found that I had babesiosis, but he never said I had Lyme. So he put me on a Z-Pak and sent me home and never brought it up again.
And did you know what babesiosis was at the time?
No. He just said I had an abnormal protein in my blood. And I was I was a mom. I was very busy raising my son. He said, take the Z-Pak and see you later. So, you know, fast forward to 2018, where my illnesses are progressing. I'm doing everything I can to try to find out why I'm losing teeth like crazy and getting respiratory and chronic sinus infections, shingles 10 to 12 times a year, just bizarre. I didn't smoke. I didn't use drugs. I exercised. I ate well. And every doctor said to me, there's absolutely nothing wrong with you. You look fantastic. You are not sick.
I'm sure you were in need of antidepressants.
They tried.
Yeah.
That's the first thing they push on us.
Because it was all in your head that you're losing teeth and that you're, yeah.
Well, the primary care doctor slyly looked at me one day and he said, I think you're bipolar.
Oh, and I haven't heard that one yet. Okay.
And that was it for me. I was done with him. So, you know, then I finally, around 2018, I had a very severe dental infection that just would not resolve. And the tooth had been root canaled, and he root canaled it again, and then he kept treating it every 2 weeks, and it wasn't resolving. So about 2 months later, I finally had the tooth extracted, but that was really what unleashed the fury of the Lyme disease. I was also going through menopause that summer, so there were some changes hormonally, and I think that combined with this massive dental infection, and also, by the way, I forgot to mention, I was diagnosed with a bone marrow disorder because this stuff had gotten into my bone marrow. So, you know, at that point, one of my Hudson Valley friends said, listen, you need to go see Dr. Stephen Bach. He's a Lyme doctor in Rhinebeck, New York. Just go see him. You know, and I had that typical attitude like, well, he doesn't take insurance. And then I said, you know, wait a minute, I'm dying here. Like, there's really something wrong. I'll pay anything to find out what's wrong. And he did 27 vials of blood, about 50 blood tests. And 4 weeks later, he said, you have Babesia, Lyme disease, Bartonella, and four strains of tick-borne relapsing fever, along with mycoplasma, chlamydia, pneumonia. I mean, you know, HHV6. I mean, you name it. He said, you're very, very sick.
Huh. Well, I mean, it's nice to have somebody actually pinpoint something, you know, rather than the whole journey that you've done. I mean, what kind of labs did he run? I mean,
So he ran some labs with Igenix, the laboratory in California. They discovered the Lyme, the Babesia, and the tick-borne relapsing fever. They did not discover Bartonella for 2 years because even though I knew I had it, I told him I had it, he said I didn't because I was negative. And then as I started treating the Lyme for about a year, I just did only herbs. I didn't want to do antibiotics. So I cured the Babesia with a combination of an herb called Cryptolepis and ozone treatments. So the Babesia was completely resolved, but I'm not getting better. So I said to him, I'm having these strange symptoms. I don't like the way I feel. Do you have a treatment called SOT that I started hearing about? He didn't have it. So I pestered him for about 9 months. He got the SOT. I had the SOT for Lyme, and I said, okay, I'm going to be cured now. I'm going to be well. Well, about 6 months after the Lyme SOT, the BART reared its ugly head. And I said, I am not feeling well. There is something wrong. I was having gastrointestinal symptoms, swollen lymph nodes, just very miserable in general. Did a test, tested positive for BART. Did an SOT, not getting better. I said, okay, we need to do some more testing. So we submitted my blood to a lab called Red Labs in Belgium. And they discovered four more strains of bacteria under the tick-borne relapsing fever, including Myomotoi. So I did an SOT for that a year ago, December. And with that, the beginning of healing started to happen. Big difference after that last SOT.
And for people that don't know what SOT is, can you explain that?
It's called supportive oligonucleopeptide therapy. And it's basically an antisense therapy that uses mRNA technology to turn off, it's like a key in a lock. It turns off as a layperson, the way I understand it, is it turns off the gene that allows the bacteria to replicate. And so the bacteria, through these molecules that are bouncing around in your body from this SOT injection, which, by the way, is made from your own blood, the bacteria cannot replicate. And so it goes through its life cycle. And as these molecules work for 4 to 6 months, the bacteria dies. Now, not everyone gets cured or, you know, gets well after one SOT. You have to do one for every strain of bacteria you have. And some people who have multiple infections have to do multiple SOTs. I have been very fortunate. I have not had to do multiple SOTs. My son and my ex-husband, who were also infected with Bartonella and Lyme, did not have to do multiple SOTs. But the SOT therapy in combination with ozone therapy, vitamin C IVs, and herbs were wonderful for me.
And ozone, that was just like UBI, where they pull, or was it like 10 pass or RHP or what?
Right. So I was very, very weak when we started doing ozone. So we started with one pass, and I did about 8 or 9 weeks of those, and I was wiped out. I mean, really weak and sick, because it was killing a lot of pathogens in my blood, and it was a one pass with a UBI. But then as I got stronger, and my doctor got more sophisticated systems of ozone, we started doing these high-dose ozones. We went to three pass, then we went to low dose, then we went to high dose. And as I did these, I probably have done, gosh, 40 or 50 of them. I really started to get better. It's just there was a lot of detox involved because, you know, as the ozone was killing, I was alternating every other week with Myers cocktails, which are, you know, the vitamin C IVs with the B vitamins and the glutathione. And in the process of all of this, partnered up with some folks who had an indoor organic farm here in the Hudson Valley, and they grow broccoli and radish microgreens, which I found out they dehydrate into a raw live organic powder. They dehydrate at room temperature and it's certified organic. And this powder contains something called sulforaphane. And sulforaphane, according to many studies I've read on the NIH website, is a tremendous antibacterial, antiviral, and anti-inflammatory. And it makes the liver produce glutathione. So I was taking a teaspoon or two a day of this broccoli powder, which initially was much, much too potent for me. I didn't realize I was overdosing and I was having shortness of breath and massive detox symptoms, chest tightness, couldn't even walk to the end of my driveway. So it was sort of like three steps forward, two steps back, two steps forward, three steps back. But the sulforaphane was really shockingly powerful. And so that helped a lot.
So how did you, I mean, because a lot of people then when they feel those reactions and they think, you know, that this is not good for me, you know, I got to stop doing this. So how did you recognize that this was something good versus that, you know, you're having allergic reaction or you're having, you know, something that was not good?
You know, having been so sick for so many years, I was always wanting to learn. So a number of years ago, I went to school for homeopathy for a few years. And what I was taught in homeopathy is that healing isn't just you take something and you feel better. healing involves a little bit of crisis because there's so much intracellular damage with these diseases that I had, right? And these Herxheimer reactions, which I was feeling from the die-off of all of these pathogens, was making me sick. And I understand that in order to heal, I have to feel worse first. In fact, I would be concerned if I felt better first. Just because I know the path of healing is I have to go backwards before I can go forward. So I recognize that as a very difficult thing with many friends of mine in the Lyme community. That we're so ill and we feel so awful that the minute we feel worse, we stop.
Yes.
And that's just, it's that is so tough because people think they're getting worse and they're not. And so I spend a lot of time in Facebook groups and on the phone with people who have Lyme disease and co-infections, talking them off a ledge and just saying, you know, look, you really, this is good. I know this doesn't feel good, but you have to detox. And, you know, my own sister's going through this right now. So I'm talking her off a ledge daily because she's herxing.
And she's dealing with Lyme as well.
My sister just got diagnosed 2 weeks ago with Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Lyme, and Bartonella. And she's been seeing doctors for 6 years, all kinds of procedures, endoscopies, gallbladder removal, you name it, and telling her nothing's wrong with her. So finally, the pain became so terrible that she decided that she would also pay to see a doctor, and she was diagnosed immediately by my doctor.
Wow. Well, yeah, and so it's interesting that we're talking about how you tell the difference between whether you're herxing or something's wrong, because there's been a lot of people in the Lyme community just in the last couple of months that are saying that they're allergic to everything that they're taking and that they can't take it. And so I ask, you know, what your symptoms are, what you're doing, and they can't, you know, it's kind of scary to tell somebody, no, you're not allergic to something when maybe they are. But I just hear a lot of that, and it's hard to explain to them that, you know, you have to kind of get worse before you get better. But
I also think, you know, there are a lot of mast cell and histamine responses. And when I first started treating, I was having severe histamine responses. I mean, I would put water in my mouth and I would turn beet red, you know, because my body was just so overloaded. The histamines were out of control. So I did a histamine-free diet for a very short time and my body responded very well to it. But you know, these are the things that the new people in the groups don't know yet. And you know, when I was home the last 4 or 5 years on the couch, 6 months to 7 months out of each year, I was just in the Facebook groups, just talking to people and trying to get them to have resources where they could go to learn about what really was happening, because these poor folks just, we as a community, we don't have or haven't had a lot of resources. And we've been, I think, some of our own best resources.
Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, that book, Healing Lyme, is just the best thing I've ever read in my life.
Yeah, and the mast cell activation, I mean, that's a big deal. And you know, like you're mentioning, on people that feel they're allergic to everything, then they need to use strategies to control that while they then are able to move forward to start to kind of kill things off, bind things, open up detox pathways, right, making sure endocrine system is where it needs to be and so forth. But it's a big deal, you know, to... What were some of the strategies that you were using for the mast cell activation and with you?
So I just, you know, I really wanted my system to calm down. So, because I was having sheets of hives all over my body. And like I said, I could drink a glass of water and I would just get this burning sensation. You know, it didn't matter what it was really that I had. So I went on, I looked up a histamine-free diet and I did that for a while. And then started doing a lot of vitamin C orally and with IV, which I did not react to. It was very healing for me to do vitamin C, you know, 30, 40 gram IVs, taking 8 to 10,000 a day orally. And let's see, obviously there was no alcohol. It just took time really for my system to calm down. But I think it was the vitamin C and the ozone that really... because I wasn't doing much other than that, taking some magnesium and calcium.
And you weren't using cryptolepsis or any of the kind of other killers, sort of say, at that time. You're allowing your immune system to, I mean, you're going after it with vitamin C and ozone, which in itself, you know, will help to clear out a lot of things. But you weren't doing any other kind of herbals for that.
I was, actually. I didn't know that I shouldn't. And so I would take the herbs and I would, of course, start burning internally because my body was reacting to it. And you know, unfortunately, I'm this type of person that if somebody says take a teaspoon of cryptolepis, I took a tablespoon 3 times a day. But in 9 months, my babesia was gone. It was just there was tremendous misery in the process.
Right. And I tell a lot of people, I tell them, I know, you know, for some of us, it's taken years and decades to get your diagnosis. You have your diagnosis of Lyme. Don't try to kill it overnight because you're going to kill yourself. Misery. You know, more is not always better when you're trying to kill off Lyme, for sure, because you can really go in a downward spiral quickly.
Alka-Seltzer Gold was very good for tremendous relief, temporary. You know, I would drink a big glass of Alka-Seltzer Gold with water, a lemon squeezed in it, and take some oral glutathione. And that would help calm me down. It would calm everything down, but it was temporary.
Yeah, and Alka-Seltzer Gold is something a lot of people take. And mm-hmm. I didn't know anything about it when I was going through my treatment. I wasn't even in the groups back then. So, yeah, I wish I would have known. Never had it before, but it seems to be some pretty amazing stuff for a lot of people to get them through some of the bad herxes.
You know, one of the things, you know, I think Lyme people might want to do, it was the first thing I did, is I was home anyway, I was sick. So I got Dr. Horowitz's books. I got Stephen Buhner's books. I just started reading them and then I read them again and then I read them again. And the education that I got out of Stephen Buhner's book, Healing Lyme, and he's got several books on co-infections and Dr. Horowitz, Why Can't I Get Better? You know, every one of these resources gave me something else to work with. And it's a lot of work for us because we have to become experts on these things.
And I think as you're doing that, I mean, kind of like what you're doing, you're reading and reading again, it becomes, the path becomes clear and you understand more what is going on with your body mm-hmm. as you're moving mm-hmm. forward. And that relieves a lot of that cortisol, that stress response, you know, so your immune system will function better. You'll be more targeted, more at peace, and more effective.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because one of the things that I see with friends of mine in the Lyme world, some of them who are suffering especially greatly, is they're not well enough. They don't have the cognitive function to absorb this very technical information in these Lyme books, especially Buhner. And, you know, that was what allowed me to heal, was when I read this, I knew that I needed to accept. I'm a very type A, top performer in my field. You know, very hard for me to accept that I can't do something. Like, that wasn't in my vocabulary. And to have that taken away from me, the ability to go do whatever I wanted, whether it was working out or going to work, you know, doing my laundry. I mean, basic tasks that everyone just takes for granted. When those things were taken away from me, if I hadn't accepted what this was, I think that this very painful journey would have been so much worse. And giving yourself permission to heal, to realize that you're human and that you deserve to have this time to get well is very important. It was to me.
Yeah, you usually tell people, I mean, there's no reason to, I mean, a wound is not going to get any better if you keep beating on it, you know. So if you are dealing with a disease, you know, don't be angry at it. Don't be, you know, just accept it and allow right. and do what you need to do to allow it to heal, instead of, you know, whatever guilt or shame or, you know, frustration or anger or whatever that may be. I mean, it's good to move through those and accept those emotions, look at them and clear them out, but you shouldn't hold on to them in regards to the disease.
Well, you know, I think part of the challenge is our families. Now, there are 7 in my family so far who've been diagnosed, but in families, and I was really the first one to get the diagnosis, our husbands, our children, our parents, if we're children, think we're hypochondriacs. My own son, who was finally diagnosed 2 years ago after a tick bite at age 5, told my doctor, I thought my mother was a hypochondriac. He said she was always sick. We had no idea. She always looked great. You know, we had no idea what was wrong with her. And right now, my fiance's 12-year-old, who was just diagnosed 3 weeks ago with 6 infections, has been telling her parents for 7 years that she's sick. Her stomach, her head, her joints, severe anxiety and paranoia, you know, nausea. I mean, you name it, right? Headaches, the gamut. They told her, because they took her to 30 doctors, that there was nothing wrong with her. And this, I watched this young lady's father sob his eyes out a few weeks ago at a school meeting where there was a doctor. And he said, I feel so horrible. My child's been telling me about her suffering for 7 years. And we pulled a tick out of her head behind her ear when she was 5. And our doctor told us we didn't need to do anything. So, you know, there's an anger that kind of comes when you find this out, because, you know, in this poor girl, you know, she's 12 years old and the suffering has been immense. In my case, I missed out on 60% of my life since my 30s. And lost millions, literally millions of dollars in lost wages. This is a disease that's really ravaging this country.
Yeah, it's horrendous. I mean, you look at, you know, that child, I mean, between 5 to 12 years old, the development that takes place, you know, and you can never relive those years. You can never get them back. I mean, it's yeah, so. And then as a parent, to know that you were listening to authority more, you mm-hmm. were listening to your child, that's a hard one to swallow.
Yeah. They tried. I mean, they took her to gastroenterologists, neurologists, primary care doctors, psychologists, and everyone just said this little girl had, you know, mental deficiencies. She's mentally ill, you know. She's a hypochondriac. It's all in her head. She doesn't want to go to school. That's why she's doing this. And finally, I bought both of her parents a book, coincidentally written by a person who was my son's therapist when he was a little boy. She lives here in the Hudson Valley, called When Your Child Has Lyme Disease. And I had no idea it was written by her when I ordered this book on Amazon. Came in the mail a week ago, and I said, I can't believe this. I actually sold her house.
Funny.
But, you know, there we really, as a community, need to support each other with information and knowledge. And, I mean, everyone in the Hudson Valley on Facebook knows me because I post all kinds of interesting things about Lyme disease, and so many people reach out and thank me and say, we never would have known or been diagnosed or had a clue if we didn't see this thing that you posted.
Yep. And yeah. I do the same thing in on my mm-hmm. personal page on Facebook and in the group I started, because I think that's the problem, you know, as I, unfortunately I'm not a parent, but I could imagine as a parent, for the most part, you're going to do what they did with that little girl, is take him to all these doctors and try to figure mm-hmm. out what's wrong with them. But then when they're convincing you that there's nothing wrong with them, if you don't have any education on Lyme disease, there's no reason for you to think that, okay, why do I not believe these doctors? You know, over and over, they're telling me nothing's wrong with her. And eventually you just kind of, I don't know, I guess maybe accept it. But that's the problem, is that there needs to be more talk about this. We've got to spread the word about even what a bullseye rash means. I got the bullseye rash, but I had no idea what it meant. And it could have saved me 13 years of misery had I been educated on what a bullseye rash was. I didn't even know what Lyme disease was. So I tell anybody and everybody anything I can tell them. And I say, if you ever go for a little while and you're sick and they say nothing's wrong with you, I'm like, you probably have Lyme. And maybe it's not the right thing to say, but that's what I throw out, you know. And people reach out to me all the time because friends will refer them to somebody else saying, you know, Tanya, my friend has Lyme, and I think you should reach out to her and ask her some questions. And, you know, that it's an amazing feeling to know that we can spread that awareness and help somebody, you know, save their life.
I mean, I think it's happening, but we know politically the cards are stacked against us. And fortunately, we do have doctors who do understand and are willing to think outside the box, especially in the functional medicine area, and, you know, really care for us. It's just, it's so expensive that, you know, a lot of the population can't afford it. So, it, you know, we're really between a rock and a hard place.
We really are, you know, and then a lot of these doctors, you know, Dr. Carlfelt knows that, you know, you put your license on the line for so many things because sure. you want to treat the patient the way that they want to be treated. But yet, you know, you get, you know what I'm talking about, you get beat up so much about what you can do, what you can't do, and you don't want to get caught doing this. And mm-hmm. and it really just, it the whole program of it, the whole circle is just, it's just so messed up. It's so
something something a lot of people don't know is here in New York, our former governor, our former disgraced governor, did a wonderful thing before he was disgraced. He passed a law that doctors in New York State can treat Lyme disease any way they see fit, because we are so we are loaded with Lyme disease in the Hudson Valley, and actually all over New York, but especially the Hudson Valley. And so that was a wonderful thing he did, because now the doctors who are treating Lyme don't have to be so afraid if they, you know, give you an IV antibiotic for 6 months or a year or years in some people's cases.
That's amazing. I don't know what that bill is or that law that they passed, mm-hmm. but that's amazing. And that should be passed in all the states. Because
it should. I know Pennsylvania is doing that too.
Yeah. And I know part of what I do each year, in fact, it was just last year, is for the Center for Lyme Action, where mm-hmm. we meet with Congress to try to get our, you know, government funding for the different, you know, the Kay Hagan Tick Act, for example. But yeah, maybe that's something that I should bring up to that organization, figure out what that is. And we need to figure this out, because we need to be treated. You know, we need right. to be treated. We may not look sick, but trust me, we are very, very sick.
So, doctor, how can we get doctors who are mainstream to, when they actually agree to test somebody for Lyme disease, how do we get them to look at Bartonella? For example, I have a very sick sister-in-law, very mentally ill, and I know she has Bart. I know exactly what it is. And she gets hospitalized every year, 3 or 4 times in a psych hospital. And I always tell them, because I'm the only one she allows to come and see her, because I'm the only person she trusts. And I always tell them she has Bartonella. They just ignore me. They refuse to. Why won't doctors test for things like Bartonellosis or?
So there are a number of reasons for that. I mean, one is, you know, one of the issues that you solved in New York, you know, but it's not solved in many other states, is that, you know, a lot of doctors lose their license if they say that it is Lyme disease. You know, so that has happened. So what becomes really important, you know, so the doctors become an easy target then for like AMA and for, you know, other medical organizations. So it is important then that the patients are really there supporting and protecting the doctors that are willing to stand up, you know, so that you are there lobbying for them, and you have organizations like I know both of you are part of, to really see what can be done to protect the doctors that are willing to test for things that are out of the norm. One of the issue is that also doctors, when they test for something, they have to do something, meaning that if they find it, they have to treat it. And so if they don't know how to treat it, or they're, you know, they end up in a kind of a gray area that they are uncomfortable being in, then their actions can be questioned, and then, you know, those actions can then be brought up to the board, and then all of a sudden things can, you know, their license can be questioned. So a lot of doctors really don't want to test for things, you know, if they don't have to. You know, one, you have the issue then with the insurance. You know, two, it is you become liable for everything that you test for.
Oh, wow. Very interesting. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, it's very crazy. There was actually, I want to bring this up, but I can't remember the details of it. Maybe one of you guys know. It was just actually a couple weeks ago, and I can't even tell you what state it was in, but there was a younger boy who had Lyme disease, and he was in the hospital, and the parents kept telling him that he had Lyme disease, and I can't remember what other co-infections. Anyways, the doctors on staff would not believe him and would not help him through it, and he ended up dying in the hospital. And the family won a multi-million dollar lawsuit against the hospital because they didn't acknowledge and treat Lyme disease. Did you see that? I can't remember the details on it, but it was in Maine. Mm-hmm. I thought it, and it just, I mean, my heart breaks for the family and for the boy that lost his life. But I was really excited to see that somebody won, somebody, you know, stood up and took action. And they had to pay the consequences for it. So
huge, huge precedent. And, you know, it just makes it harder for the medical establishment to keep denying this thing as this goes, as this happens. I mean, there's now this tick-borne working group in Washington, D.C., and I know Richard Horowitz is on that group, but there are some other people from the IDSA on that group. So that's challenging.
And like you're saying, this is a huge precedence, and I think it's important for the Lyme community then to really recognize this precedence, and when they go to hospital, then to point towards this, and so that the hospital then recognize the danger in not recognizing Lyme, and so that it becomes an educational process where then medical professions see that they have a liability when they don't recognize it. And I mean, I was talking about that they have a liability when they test for something, but if it's something that is continually brought up, you know, as a patient and the doctor, and you have, you are injured because there was not medical care, that should be something that you can then, you know, go against the doctors for.
And then, of course, we have the challenge in flawed testing. And my mom was in the hospital last month, and I know that she has Lyme and co-infections. But, of course, they told me that there was no sign of it there, even though we know she's tested positive for it before. So there's that challenge, too, is the flawed testing that they're using. And it's just, it's a big, I think our greatest weapon is collaboration and education in our community. Yeah. We're hundreds of thousands of us throughout the country, and we know millions of people combined. And so the only thing I think, you know, there's movies now that are being released and documentaries about this. And recently at the Woodstock, New York Lyme Film Festival, there was a new documentary film that was released called The Monster Inside Me. And
we actually had them on our podcast several months ago. Yeah.
Amazing. Amazing. And so I think it's getting out there. We just all have to collaborate. And we're so happy to have a doctor here with us. And, you know, that's what we need.
He's pretty amazing.
Oh, well, thank you.
I'll have to tell him that. But yeah, you're absolutely right. We need to talk about it. It needs to be talked about. It needs to be discussed. And it's not just the month of May where it's, you know, Lyme Disease Awareness Month. It needs to be talked about year round. And we've got to educate people. And maybe eventually the doctors will kind of fall into place on it. You know, I don't know. But all I can do is, you know, send my voice, you know, speak my piece and share all we can. And that's, you know, one of the reasons why we do the podcast is, you know, not just for awareness, but also to give, you know, those listeners out there that are in bed or miserable or, you know, wanting to not be living right now, we've got to somehow give them hope and the reassurance that no matter how bad they are or where they are at in their journey, they can get better. They just have to find their why they want to get better, and they can do it. And we bring all these resources to them. There's so many different ways to treat Lyme and get better from it. They just need to know about it. So
I had heard, or somewhere along the line in my research, that it took over 100 years for medicine to recognize syphilis. And that, you know, syphilis spirochete is very similar to Lyme in the corkscrew shape and everything. Yep. And I just think that when I speak to doctors that I've known in different fields and different branches of medicine, they say, you know, it takes medicine a long time to respond to something that's new or that they have to learn about. It's a very slow process to get everybody on board, you know, and so that's challenging, right?
And I think it's important for patients and people to recognize that, you know, that very fact, that when you're talking to a doctor, usually you're dealing with science that was 30 to 40 years ago.
Right.
Just because the slow process of implementing, of shifting what's called standard of care, and that takes forever. So you have, you know, scientists, you have research done, and then after a while, you know, it goes into, you know, standard of care, and that takes a very long time. And it was interesting you brought syphilis. I mean, syphilis, yes, is very similar to the spirochete, but in terms of complexity, you know, syphilis is like a little flea compared to Lyme that is like a mammoth. Yeah, yeah. So it's the complexity is just so beyond with the Lyme, even though it's very similar and you can use similar things to treat it. It's just the intelligence and the Lyme spirochete that's just so it's fascinating.
And if it took them 100 years to figure out syphilis, how many years is it going to take to figure out Lyme? I mean,
I couldn't, speaking to that about the sophistication of the organism, I mean, I read Lab 257 and the book Bitten by Chris Newby, and wow, I was shocked at how, and even my own doctor says, this is one amazing organism, what it can do, you know, and that's in a whole nother conversation we could have. But, you know, Connecticut, which I live very close to the Connecticut border, we've got Yale and some prestigious healthcare organizations there. So my ex-husband gets bitten. He goes down to Yale and he sees the chief of medicine there, who happens to be his primary care doctor. And he says, oh, John, you know, we know that Lyme is cured in 7 days with doxy.
Yeah. How many times has that worked?
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a little bit of distance to travel yet before we're caught up, I think. But
yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's not many people that just have Lyme disease. They have chronic Lyme disease because they can't get the diagnosis fast enough to get the treatment.
And the co-infections are, I mean, look, if here in the Hudson Valley, if you happen to test positive for Lyme at your doctor's office, which is a rare occurrence, but it does happen, they're not going to test you for co-infections. And we know Lyme doesn't travel alone. So there's so let's say they do get doxy and they're very lucky and they even maybe get 30 days, which is like 1 out of 1,000. You know, generally it's a 7 to 10 day prescription if you fight really hard. My sister was able to persuade her primary to give her 5-year-old 30 days of doxy when she got bitten, but no test for any co-infections. So.
Yeah, I think one of the challenges, I'm like you're mentioning, is that obviously the testing is flawed, and so then the medical community is operating out of a, you know, they have the Western blot as the gold standard, and mm-hmm. I mean it's like playing the lotto if you actually get a positive, you know, with the Western blot. So I think it'd be, that's kind of like step number one, I think, if organizations can come together and have more of a targeted spear in mm-hmm. their efforts, and then make sure that we, you know, this is one of the things that we really try to move, and then kind of pound on that. And obviously the recognition, you need to be able to test for it and to shift into like Igenix or these kind of alternative right. testing methods to make them more standard and recognized, rather than a doctor throwing Western blot at a patient and say, see, you don't have it. You know,
I'd like to just add one last thing, that now that you're saying that, it brought up a thought in my mind that because I do go on so many doctor's appointments with people who are not well and they don't know why, I say to the doctor when they refuse to do the test, when they refuse to give an antibiotic, when they refuse, I say, listen, per the CDC, Lyme is a clinical diagnosis. And when I say that, every single time they stop and they look at me and they offer the patient at least the antibiotic, because Lyme is a clinical diagnosis. It has to be done based on symptoms because the testing is flawed. And if we could just be armed, better armed with the proper things to say to the healthcare community, I think that they will respond better to that.
I agree. And I know, you know, my wife, she battles health freedoms, you know, a lot here in this state. Mm-hmm. And so with that, then there's how to organize and the constituent, or how to educate the constituents as to how to deal with, you know, governmental organizations to protect mm-hmm. your rights. So it becomes really important then to say that when this happened, do this. And then, you know, so exactly what you're saying is to have a conversation with the doctor in a way that puts them in a place where you can have a better outcome.
Right. Thank you for letting me get that in there.
Yeah. I think that was great.
Yeah, absolutely. It, just totally lost my train of thought. What I was going to say, Lyme brain. Yeah, I use that excuse all the time. It's not old age; it's Lyme brain.
So I'm curious. Yeah. So what are you right now? You're symptom free. You're cured. Where are you at?
No, I would say that right now I'm going to be 57 in July. I've been very ill since my 30s. I am feeling right now. Just this last few months, very well. But if I get an infection, like a respiratory infection, which I had around Thanksgiving, it'll take me 6 to 8 weeks to get rid of it. I do tend to get more infections than the average person. I do have some knee pain, some hip pain, but I mean, I'm living my life. I can't do a lot of things that my friends do who are quote, normal people. I will never have that back because there's too much time in my life that's gone by, but I'm satisfied enough now that I'm not sick all the time, wondering what's wrong with me. You know, I can live reasonably well right now. I mean, I still have to get proper rest and take very good care of myself, but greatly, I'd say improved since 2020, improved 75 to 80%.
That's awesome. And the beauty, I mean, from I gather is that you have, when something happened, you have enough experience and dealt with your situation that you know what kind of tools to start to lean on.
I do. And I think that's really important.
Yes, and we know our bodies. We've been through so much with it. We kind of know how they're going to react to certain things, and we know what we need to do to avoid things.
That relationship too with your provider. I mean, my doctor is so, he trusts me so much that, and I trust him so much, and he knows that if I go in there and say, listen, you know, this isn't right, he will immediately test because he knows. And he says, wow, like, you know, you really can. I'm like, well, I just know. And it's great. You got to have that relationship with your doctor.
You absolutely do. You absolutely do.
And what I'm curious a little bit more. So you had the sulforaphane that moved the needle. You have cryptolepsis that moved the needle. Ozone, vitamin C, anything else that you felt really?
SOT was the ultimate
SOT.
Game changer.
Okay, yeah.
Ultimate game changer for me. Mm-hmm. It's been amazing. Cryptolepis works 50% of the time by itself. So I think you have to take a lot of it, or at least I did. But, you know, I think herbs are great. They definitely got me from a CDC negative to a CDC positive. But it was agonizingly slow. And so the SOT and the ozone are, to me, they're kryptonite. They are dynamite.
And I, yes, I want to kind of, CDC negative to CDC positive. So a lot of times what happens is that not until you actually treat Lyme is when you're able then to test positive for it. So
took a year.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's another one of our issues in the world, is that I wasn't diagnosed CDC positive. And so many people are not. And so we're not getting counted in these annual counts of, you know, how many people get diagnosed with Lyme every year. We need to all be recognized for it, because people will then understand it really is our pandemic, you know, Lyme disease. But if you can't, you know, the guidelines to the CDC of whether or not you have Lyme, I think they're too strict. They're not in line with where they need to be.
I don't know if you've ever heard of Mary Beth Pfeffer. She's an investigative journalist who wrote a book called Lyme, the Sign of Climate Change, or something like that. She's an amazing investigative reporter. And she talks a lot about these things that you're speaking about now. She's amazing. She advocates for Lyme disease and travels all over the United States writing about it.
I love that. You know, we were talking about, you know, earlier about, you know, reading and learning about our body. And there are so many people that are so sick that they can't do that. They can't search out the resources. And that's why they need people like us that have gone through it firsthand to help guide them through their journey, you know? And I think that it's amazing how many Facebook groups that are out there that, you know, offer that support from people. And I used to see all the time people, you know, comment and they're saying, well, nobody that got better with Lyme is here anymore. They leave the groups. And I don't see that very often anymore. And it just truly warms my heart to know that so many more people like yourself are staying around and educating and sharing, you know, what we've learned and giving them ideas and hope. So I love that.
It's what saved my life. I mean, in the early part of this in 2018, I felt so lost and I felt I had no purpose because I was home on my couch and couldn't get off the couch. So the only thing I could do was to go on Facebook and talk to people and share knowledge and information that I was reading and learning. And it literally saved my life to do that, to be able to take this knowledge in and say, hey, you know, I learned this thing today. I saw this by Steven Buhner. I read this by Dr. Horowitz. And it saved my life because there was literally nothing else I could do.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I love that. My brain didn't work, so I didn't know my name, so I couldn't go there. I would check out before my diagnosis. I would check out all the books at the library, and I'd have post-it notes all over my house about little things that I read and took away from the book. But for me, it was my little baby girl, my little four-legged dog that got me through my days. Because if it wasn't for her, I probably never would have got out of bed. But she needed to be fed.
Amazing. I hope you give her very good food.
Oh, you know I do.
Beautiful. Well,
thank you so much for having me.
Well, this has been a pleasure. Is there anything else that you feel that is important that we haven't covered? I mean, because you're on so many groups and you're such a great support. Is there something else that's really important that should be said?
I don't want to speak just about my area because you guys are so far away, but I just think that, you know, it's getting to a point now where Lyme disease testing, especially in children, should start to be looked at as almost a typical annual thing, because there are so many children, and I really worry about the kids because they don't deserve, none of us deserve this, but the children especially, they don't have the ability to articulate as well, and the parents don't understand. And I think that, you know, thinking about having our children tested at their physical at least gives them an opportunity, a possibility of getting a test. And I always tell people, when you go for a test, whether it's for you or your children, please get a copy of it, because they're going to tell you if you're negative, even if you have the bacteria, if you don't have five bands. So I just tell everyone, please get copies of your tests and review them with somebody who you know is in one of these groups or that has Lyme or knows how to read them. Because if you have the bacteria, you've got it. You know, I had primary, I had doctors test me 50 times and they all told me I was negative.
Yeah.
So,
no, that's a great point. Yes, and we have the right to ask right then and there to get a copy of our test results. And definitely, and you know what? It doesn't take a rocket science to look at it and figure it out that you have the bacteria. It really doesn't. It's pretty easy. But like you said, people can post it on the groups and share information, and they can be informed by people that are going through it that, yes, you are positive. So unfortunately, don't always believe your doctor when they say that you don't have it.
Get copies of your lab results. Yeah.
It's a great piece of advice.
Yeah, and that's, you know, like you're mentioning, the bands. I mean, if you have one band that's showing up, you have a band, and you're likely, I can't remember the percentage, but it's like 88% chance if you have one band that you have Lyme disease.
Right.
If you have two bands, then you're like, you know, high 90. Yeah, so the five band, that's ridiculous. I mean, that's...
And of course, we know they eliminated the one band that was very, very specific to Lyme, and that's why so many people get a negative result. But, you know, if you have two, which is what I had for a whole year before I started treating, you know, and 41 isn't one of them. I mean, 41 is kind of a common one. It's not necessarily Lyme specific. But, I mean, if you've got two, come on. You've got it. But the biggest thing is to get those results and then talk about them with somebody who understands Lyme disease.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
Wonderful point.
Well, thank you so much. It was awesome having you. And thank you for what you're doing in the Lyme community, being there, supporting people, and guiding them through, you know, going to doctor's visits. I mean, that's incredible. Thank you so much.
It really is. You're doing amazing work out there, and we appreciate you, and they do too.
So
super nice meeting you. Thank you so much for sharing your journey with us.
Anytime.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
The information in this podcast is for educational purposes only, and it's not designed to diagnose or treat any disease. I hope this podcast impacted you as it did me. Please subscribe so that you can be notified when new episodes are released. There are some excellent shows coming up that you do not want to miss. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please take a moment to write a review, and please don't keep this information to yourself. Share them with your family and friends. You never know what piece of information that will transform their lives. For past episodes and powerful information on how to conquer Lyme, go to integrativelymesolutions.com. And an additional powerful resource, limestream.com. For Lyme support and group discussions, join Tanya on Facebook at Lyme Conquerors Mentoring Lyme Warriors. If you'd like to know more about the cutting-edge integrative Lyme therapies my center offers, please visit thecarlfeldcenter.com. Thank you for spending this time with us, and I hope to see you at our next episode of Integrative Lyme Solutions with Dr. Carlfeld. Thank you.